Hello, everyone. Welcome to Selling to Schools Radio. My name is Glenn McCandless. I'm your host for this program, and I appreciate that you're here. Before me and my guests dive into the smoking hot topic for today, how to sell and market products to schools, just a quick reminder to also visit sellingtoschools.com and the other STS channels for more free sales and marketing advice from some of the most successful people in the education industry. It's an amazing treasure chest of expert insight amassed over the last two decades, and you will not find this type of practical go-to-market information anywhere else, and it's all free. So, let's get right to it. Distribution, it's our biggest challenge. It's been our biggest challenge for as long as anyone can remember. And the audaciously big question is, how and with whose help do you best gain access to the audience of educators that you need to connect with, and how do you engage them around your product or service message, especially school administrators who control most of the buying power, and especially lately, seemingly they're protected and hidden behind a wall about as big as the one Donald Trump is talking about building across our southern border. It's been a very tough question to answer with any reliability, and it's a challenge I've personally dealt with and attempted to overcome for most of my career. So with that in mind, I'm really pleased to have as our guest someone who has a ton of experience dealing with this challenge, Jim McGarry. Jim's the president and CEO of the Education Market Association. The shorthand for that, by the way, is EdMarket. It's a professional organization that is just celebrating its 100th anniversary. Wow. EdMarket's mission is to connect leaders of organizations who want to succeed in the education marketplace. So I invited Jim to share his perspective with you today because EdMarket published a study recently, actually early in 2017. It's called EdTech Distribution in an Evolving Marketplace. Researchers at Harvard University studied this challenge and interviewed dozens of industry insiders to gain perspective and to provide some important findings and updates and advice. The study categorizes and it identifies key emerging distribution trends and challenges facing the educational technology industry. So I'm going to ask Jim about some of the highlights and conclusions of this study. And at the end of the program, I'm going to tell you how you can get your own copy of the study, along with a lot of other valuable advice about distribution, sales, and marketing for EdTech products and services. So here we go. Jim, thanks for being a guest on Selling to Schools Radio.
Well, thanks, Glenn. I'm really happy to be on the program and look forward to our conversation.
Me too, Jim. I really appreciate you taking your time out today to be on the show. And I know my audience will appreciate it as well, because this is one of the hottest topics, as you well know, in our industry. I want to start off with just a question about EdMarket Association and why the association invested to have this new channel study done recently. I mean, was there something that triggered this? Was there a change in the marketplace or something in your own organization that really brought this to the top?
Well, as we went and met with people at many different industry events, the conversations that we were having tended to be around they were either content-driven or capital-driven. And then all of a sudden it shifted and companies, producers, developers, and VCs started saying, how do we monetize these great ideas? And they're realizing that just going to social media and posting things wasn't going to get the attention of the audiences they needed to get. So there really seemed to be a disconnect between the publishers and the ideas and the great products and how they were going to actually get to market. And at the same time, we noticed that the established channels of distribution weren't really getting as involved in the ed tech space as we had expected. So we wanted to see, what's happening in this huge market. Where are these emerging channels and what role can the association play?
Well, that's fantastic. And your mention of social media is very interesting because throughout our lives, Jim, and we're both getting old, we've seen a lot of evolution in channels, and social media didn't even exist until recently. And it's almost like the last in thing seems like the hot way to go to market and people jump on it, whether it's email or whatever it is. Right now, social media is all the rage. And people believe that if they just get enough chatter on social media, that somehow that'll drive interest and awareness and they'll sell stuff. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that. And I do think it is another reason to look at this topic, which has been discussed for many years, and give it some fresh look. So the report, Jim, which I read carefully, and by the way, I was one of the contributors, so thanks for that too. The report cites persistent challenges that face startups in ed tech, but also brands that are just less known. They may not be startups, and decision makers who run the school districts, it seems, are adverse to new players. So does that also extend to companies who offer products and services that aren't published for the curriculum? And is everybody sort of victimized by this challenge?
Well, I think that, you know, in the school market as a whole, there tends to be a general risk averseness. And especially as a lot of the decisions about curriculum and what had to be taught in the classroom were coming from not only the state governments, but the federal governments, that a lot more power was being concentrated in quite a few publishers. And so the safe route for folks was to go with the large publishers. And so I think that's where it's come from. But we're seeing that a lot of shift in that now. We're seeing a trend back to local decisions. And I think that there's going to be a lot more opportunity for smaller publishers and for new ideas to get into the classroom.
Well, that's encouraging. I'm sure that there's many people listening to this that'll be music to their ears. One of the key challenges, Jim, that is in the report loud and clear is this whole question of, you know, are they adverse to new players? But I wonder from your perspective, as you read through the report, and of course you were involved in the process of creating it, but as you read the report in its final version, what challenges cited in the report do you think have the most negative impact on members of your association? Which of the many challenges that's in this report really rises to the top?
Well, I think in the recent past, it was really the transition from print to digital for curriculum that has been a big challenge for many of the members of our organization. But I think that's even shifted now, and we're getting to a point where there's just so many options out there for educators, for teachers, for school districts, that there's this need for expertise and the ability to curate what works and what doesn't and be able to get some data to back up the claims of the different products and how they're going to work. So I think that's a challenge, is to be able to, you know, not only have a great product or a great idea, but to be able to have some documentation that proves that it will impact student outcomes.
Boy, that is a big one for sure. Efficacy studies, the whole what works debate, that is a huge one. And that probably would go and live beyond the current report that you published. I mean, it could probably be a whole nother report, I imagine. And, you know, if you get to the heart of this, the problem, Jim, of lack of distribution channels, I'll call it that broadly, has dogged our industry for decades. I mean, I've been in this business now for going on 30 years. And as long as I can remember, this particular challenge has stifled our industry. It has stifled investment. It's really kept innovation from reaching our classrooms. And it's a huge problem. It's well understood by you and me and by the members of your association. So on the supplier side, this is a well understood problem and challenge. But I don't think it's that well known and understood by the taxpayers who are ultimately paying the price of this. So what do you think needs to happen here, Jim? We've struggled with this for a long time.
Well, I think it's really a matter of who is the decision maker in terms of the types of products that we're talking about. And what is that process so that there is a smooth opportunity for new ideas and good products to be able to get into the hands of the teachers and the students that need them. And one of the disconnects has been that a lot of times the decision makers aren't cooperating or getting feedback from the people that actually use the products. And so the implementation really hasn't been anything that has really accomplished the goals that were set out. So I think it's more important now that, you know, the taxpayers and the policymakers begin to kind of understand what kind of restraints are they putting on the decision making here, And are they going to trust the people that have the authority to make the decisions about the products that are going to impact the students that they have responsibility for? And to the ability that they can focus on that, I think that the channels of distribution will work themselves out, because products are always looking for a way to get to market. And there's not one solution. It's an omni-channel world. People have to be doing everything. They need a robust website, and they need to be on social media, and they need direct sales force, and they need to be on the phone, and. So there's lots that's going on out there, but really identifying who has the decision-making authority and getting the input in that process from the people that are going to need and use the products, I think is the key.
Well, it's definitely a key. And I would point out too that from my perspective, maybe you don't fully appreciate, but the work that you do and the role of professional associations, industry associations, I think has a significant play too. I mean, if you've got a lot of different suppliers that have come together professionally in an association like you have, I think that there's an opportunity for dialogue and education to go on. I know you're actively involved in it. This report is an example of that. But I think, again, I imagine not many taxpayers or policymakers are even aware of this wonderful study that you did. And maybe if they read it, they would be enlightened. So maybe we need to do something about creating a consumer version of the report, which would be amazing. I want to close out, sensitive to time, Jim. I appreciate your time again this morning and my listeners too. But close out with a question or a discussion topic here that I've really taken note of. And the report notes, and I have seen as well, and I'm sure you have too, Jim, the increasing role of the educational service agency. I mean, these things have evolved from what might be called a professional development or training center for educators to taking a much, much broader role. And I know, Jim, you're aware that some ESAs are now serving as quasi-channels. They're acting as cooperative buying channels. Some of them are even reselling products and services. And I just wonder, is this part of the solution? It's a fascinating development. I'm not sure it's directly because of the problem we're talking about this morning, but it seems like it might be part of the solution.
I really think that it is. I mean, if you think about it, there's over 500 of these ESAs in the country right now, and they are very close to the school and what the school needs. And as you mentioned, they started out primarily in professional development. And as I've had some conversations with some of the folks, it was kind of an interesting transition, because they look at things still through that professional development lens. And so, you know, the electronic smart boards were all the rage there for a while. And you go into classroom after classroom, and the teacher had no idea how to use it. Yes. In terms of other than, you know, just projecting something up there for once in a while. And so they started, you know, professional development, how to use this equipment. And then it became kind of a natural progression to be able to look at the add-ons to that type of equipment and how they could participate in getting that into the classroom. But to me, part of the significant change here is the transition from a channel of distribution to being close to and representing the manufacturer, publisher, versus a channel of distribution to being close to and really representing the school or the end user. So they're acting more as a gatekeeper. And what they're doing is evaluating different types of tools and products and then deciding which ones they feel solve the needs of the schools that are under their influence, and then forwarding that on. So they are doing some of that curation process that I talked about a little bit earlier. And that's a pretty interesting change out there. They're not just trying to sell, you know, anything that comes along that where they think that they can make money. What they're really doing is trying to solve problems at the school level and doing a really important study of the products that are available, and then making decisions on which ones of them they think will solve the problems that are out there.
Well, it is a fascinating development for sure, one which I suspect you and I could come back to the program and have a whole different discussion. So since we don't have time for that this morning, I'm going to say thank you, Jim, for being on the program. This is a fascinating topic. I thank you for your good work with EdMarket Association, and particularly for investing time and energy and money to producing such a great study with Harvard University help. It's a terrific study and report, and this is the kind of work that we need in our industry. So thank you for that, and thank you for being on the program.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Glenn. And if anybody is interested in the study, they can go to our website, which is just edmarket.org, and have access to the information.
Thank you, Jim. And thanks again for being on the program.
Okay, take care.
So that wraps up another Selling to Schools radio program. I thank you for listening. I encourage you to dive into the archives on this radio channel and listen to dozens of great interviews with industry experts on topics that will help you succeed. And I encourage you again to check out sellingtoschools.com, Selling to Schools LinkedIn group, Selling to Schools SlideShare, and share this knowledge and information with your colleagues and coworkers. It's the best information you can get anywhere. And remember, Selling to Schools, it's all about your success. Our expertise is your success. Have a great day.